I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, in for Tenzina Vega this week, and you're listening to The Takeaway. Last summer's global protests against white supremacy and systemic racism led to institutions from corporate America to municipal police, colleges and universities, philanthropies and media organizations, all to take stock of how race and inequality manifest in their work. And this included museums. Now, some museums are reckoning with their past in very tangible ways. This April, in a historic move, Germany announced it would return stolen artifacts currently in its museums back to Nigeria, including the priceless Benin bronzes of the then Kingdom of Benin. And in March, the University of Aberdeen in Scotland agreed to repatriate its Benin bronze. France also indicated similar plans this year. Yet some museums, including the famed British Museum and the Metropolitan Museum of Art, have not committed to doing the same, despite having sizable collections of looted objects, including Benin bronzes. For more on this, we're joined by Karen Atiya. She is Global Opinions Editor at The Washington Post. Karen, always good to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And also with us is Chika Okeke Agolo, who is professor at Princeton University in the Department of Art and Archaeology and the Department of African American Studies. Chika, also thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So Karen, let's just start with why some of these museums in Europe have announced that they're returning these artifacts. How have they been framing this decision?
So obviously the latest, as you mentioned in your intro, Germany has pledged to return the Benin, its collections of the Benin bronzes back to Nigeria. And the framing was of basically of a almost of a moral obligation to do so. And it's interesting that we're even talking about this right now when it comes to Germany's history and past in Africa. It also, just over the past weekend, has agreed to pay out some 1 billion euros to those that it colonized in Namibia. But it's really this reckoning with the sourcing, with the history, with the violence of how these objects were stolen in these punitive violent raids in the Kingdom of Benin. So it's been really intriguing to see Germany really taking this lead, and we do have to note that it's also because Nigeria has basically agreed to they're constructing a museum to be able to house these objects back in Benin City. Again, thousands of these objects exist outside of Benin. And so now the arguments for so long have been that, there aren't museums, there aren't institutions that can safely have them, that can safely carry them. But there are now mechanisms and institutions in place that will house these objects in Nigeria.
Chika, I want to come to you on part of what Karen mentioned there around this question of the violent ways in which these objects end up in these European and American museums. Can you tell us a little bit about that history?
Sure. The history of the Benin artifacts is quite precise, simply because it's probably one of the most well-documented acts of colonial looting that took place in the winter of 1897, when the British Navy, under the pretext of what they called a punitive expedition to the Kingdom of Benin, which was the most powerful kingdom in what was called the Oil Rivers, that is southern, today's southern Nigeria, the attempt to seize control of the trade in the region from the kingdom made it necessary on the part of the British to vanquish the Oba of Benin. And they did that in a number of ways, signing bogus treaties and so forth. But in 1896, one of their captains, British Captain Phillips, took an entourage into Benin at a time when he was warned not to enter the kingdom. It was an holy period. But he did anyway. He was attacked, and some of his men were killed. The British then used that as an opportunity to invade, burn down, and loot the palace. But before they went on that expedition, they had already sent word to the Foreign Office in England indicating that the palace had tremendous treasures, which, if they were taken back to England and sold, could pay for the cost of the expedition. In other words, they knew what they were going to do in the Kingdom of Benin, which was to embark on a military expedition, actualize the goal of empire, and still have the Benin people pay for it by virtue of seizing their treasures and selling them off to buyers, museums, and so forth in Europe in 1898, which was when the government of Britain organized the first auction sale just a year after the expedition. And that's how these objects spread across Europe and eventually the United States.
So that history is so critical and valuable to know, this idea that there was a clear understanding about what that choice was and the ways that it was connected to a particular kind of fiscal calculus. Karen, can you help us to then put that history into a contemporary context and say, why then does it matter for these objects to be returned?
So I think it is a really important point that was brought up. I mean, just about this history that even museums and many of these institutions were part of, in Europe, were part of the colonizing project, would send letters to militaries asking them to bring back these treasures. And I think, and not just treasures for you know, fiscal enrichment, but really as basically trophies of the conquest under the pretext that we, the victors, want to learn about those that we conquered.
Chika, maybe I can come back to you here, because I'm interested in whether or not there's any argument for keeping these items in museums, and by museums, I mean museums that are not on the continent. How would these U.S. museums or European museums justify not giving them back?
They've had really several arguments and excuses, all of them really terrible, at best untenable. The first is that they claim that these museums in the United States and Europe, because they are well endowed, must keep the world's cultural heritage for humanity. This was the argument that some of the captains of the industry made in 2002 when they made a declaration arguing against the repatriation at the time of the Elgin marbles, the so-called Elgin marbles from the Parthenon that are presently at the British Museum. They, of course, were defending the British Museum's right to keep these objects for mankind. Or humankind. That was a major argument that they made. The second one was something that Karen mentioned earlier, which was that, well, you see, these countries, these societies where these objects were taken from don't have the resources to keep them. And so we might as well safeguard them in our fancy museums. But I've always thought that that argument sounded like someone stealing your fancy car and basically arguing that he could not possibly return it because your garage is so crappy. and then demand that until you build a nice looking garage for this fancy car, the car will not be returned. I don't see a difference, from the kind of argument that they've made. And that's why I think, and this point has to be made, the fact that the Nigerians are building a museum is not and should not be the good reason for returning these objects, because it buys into this idea that, well, poor countries don't deserve their stuff back. The principle is what is at issue. The Nigerians or the Africans can decide how they want to conserve their cultural heritage. And by the way, the Greeks built one of the best museums in the whole world, hoping that their Elgin marbles would be returned for the Olympics some years ago. Up till now, they have not been returned. So the argument about building new museums in Africa is really not what we should focus on. Good for the Nigerians that are building their museum, but that is not the reason why these European and American museums can now say, oh, well, now that they have good museums, we'll return them. What of the other countries that don't have the resources to build fancy museums? That is the question.
Oh, I so appreciate that analysis, Professor. And you know, not only that it's a fancy car in the fancy garage, but also that it was stealing the fancy car that made building the fancy garage even possible in the first place. Karen, let me come to you on this, because there's this kind of moment in 2018 where this breaks through in popular culture in part through the film The Black Panther. Let's just take a listen for a quick second, Karen.
Tell me about this one.
Also from Benin, 7th century, Fula tribe, I believe.
Nah.
I beg your pardon.
It was taken by British soldiers in Benin, but it's from Wakanda, and it's made out of vibranium. Don't trip. I'm gonna take it off your hands for you.
These items aren't for sale.
How do you think your ancestors got these? You think they paid a fair price? Or did they take it like they took everything else?
Karen, I have to say, I know a lot of people are Wakanda forever. I'm actually Killmonger forever. And this was one of those moments. But the very fact that this was in a 2018 film suggests that this has been in conversation long before the summer of 2020. Can you talk about sort of what the long-term movement to repatriate these artifacts and treasures has been?
Absolutely. Yes. Team Killmonger all the way, especially with that scene. And I think listening to that scene also brings up a really important and sore point for museums, which is that, you know, in that scene, Killmonger, who is Black and who is knowledgeable about the history and culture of, well, you know, the fictional Wakanda, but of Africa, knows more than the white British curator who's presenting herself as the expert and the safekeeper of African culture and art. And I think this question about safety of objects, we do know that institutions here in the US in particular have come under a microscope when it comes to the fact that many museum staff, curators are very white, and that Black and African curators are rarely afforded the opportunities to be able to even be able to curate and present exhibits and make decisions about our own heritage and culture. So, you know, when I wrote about this, I just grappled with this question of when Western museums say, well, things are safe, but yet not even giving the opportunity to diversify the space, to create spaces for Black people and Black community to even come and have this dialogue, right? So it's sort of like how for museums to say that they want to have these conversations, that they want to present, you know, these dialogues on all of humanity, and yet they refuse to basically desegregate and basically in include and empower Black people for us to talk about our own histories and art.
Professor Okeke Agolo, on our last moment here, or last minute here, can you just build on Karen's point and say a bit about what U.S. museums need to be doing in this moment around racial justice?
Well, the U.S. museums, as I've said in some other forum, have been behaving like the ostrich. In other words, for them, this is not the problem of the United States. Rather, it's Europe's problem because the colonizing nations are in Europe. But the fact that Germany, which did not invade Benin, decided this year, as you mentioned, to return the artifact, makes it necessary for U.S. museums to step up and tell us what they are going to do about the looted Benin artifacts in their collections.
Thank you so much to both of you for joining us today. Karen Atiyah is the Global Opinions Editor at The Washington Post, and Chika Okeke-Aghalo is a professor at Princeton University in the Department of Art and Archaeology and the Department of African American Studies.